Thanks for choosing the weekly podcast from Radio Today. We are live on location in central London this week. We've got David Lloyd's Radio Moments, James Cridland's thoughts on the state and future of the industry, and we're at Drive to Digital at the British Museum.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Well, this is an interesting start to the Radio Today programme this week. I'm Stuart Clarkson. Radio Today's Roy Martin is here with me. And if we get out of breath, it's because we're striding across central London.
We're walking. We don't have time to sit down and do this, so we're doing it en route to our next appointment.
Which is dinner, or tea as we call it in the north. So we've just been at Drive to Digital 2018, the digital radio conference. And you're going to hear in this podcast from various speakers and delegates who've been at the conference today. And it fascinating day, quite interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah, the highlight for me, if you were asking, was just chatting to Ralph Bernard there at the end. What a star. He won an award for being a dab god, I think was the official title. And yeah, I had a quick chat to him, and you were telling him all about your days working at Heriwood.
Yeah, I thanked him for paying my wages for 7 months when I worked at Heriwood about 15 years ago. We're just about across a busy road. This is a novel idea. We should do this every week on the podcast. I think let's go that way and then across. So the big announcement really wasn't an announcement. We thought we might get some confirmation from the government about dates for digital radio switchover, but it ain't happening.
No switchover date. We heard lots of things from the rest of the world. So Norway, they're pretty much saying they're successfully switched over. Switzerland is next in 2021. Ready for a big switchover in 2022, and they're learning from Norway's mistakes, which is they said that Switzerland are going to basically put everybody on DAB. They're not going to leave anybody on FM because it dilutes the numbers, and they just basically want to do it all in one swoop. So if that comes over to Britain, then we can, I don't know, they've said that the community stations and small stations will stay on FM, but who knows what they will do in the future.
Something else that has happened this week was the closing date for the expressions of interest for small-scale DAB multiplexes, and it looks like there's a couple of hundred applications been put in, or expressions of interest been put in, so you'll hear more about that later on the podcast. So lots to come from Drive to Digital 2018. We've had a couple of other big stories going on this week, not least this kind of global versus Bauer thing with the big top 40.
Yes, that was an interesting one. The basic headline on that is that Bauer said to Global one day, probably just in an email as you do, we're going to pull out of your chart show, we don't want to take it anymore. So that's that. And then Global responded saying, well, if you're not taking it, we're not making it available to the wider industry. So Global blaming Bauer by the sounds of it, that the chart will basically come to an end in its current form and just continue on Heart and Capital.
And something else we didn't see coming from Global this week, they've gone into out-of-home marketing and bought PrimeSight and another smaller operator in the billboard market. So interesting strategy from Global, diversifying from radio to another market.
Well, they've got to go where the money is, haven't they? It was rumoured a few weeks ago on the industry sites for outdoor, whatever that is, maybe it's outdoortoday.co.uk, if not, quick register it. So it was rumoured on those, so it wasn't a big surprise, like most people are saying, but yeah, a good move. And what next? Maybe they'll buy Pearl and Dean and go into everybody's cinema screens as well.
As a tip for you, Ashley and Stephen, if you're listening. A couple of other stories to just tell you about this week if you've missed them on radiotoday.co.uk. Congratulations to Chris Burns. She's the new head of BBC Local Radio. Been given that job in the last 7 days. And what was the other story we were going to talk about? Oh, Radio 4 has got a new PM presenter, Evan Davis. So he's moving from Newsnight to take over from Eddie Mayer. So there we are.
Should we have pizza?
I can smell pizza already. We're getting near the restaurant. So thank you for tuning in this week. Lots to come from Drive to Digital. So enjoy hearing from some of the speakers.
Broadcast Bionics, solutions for radio, sponsors the Radio Today programme.
I'm here with Paul Hyde, who's director of Tech UK. Paul, digital switchover, it could be coming, but we don't know. No formal announcement, and that's what you want, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we would have hoped that DCMS could make the announcement today. I mean, to be fair to Ian, Matt Hancock didn't expect to be running the NHS 3 months ago, nor did Jeremy Wright expect to be running DCMS. So, you know, the changes that have occurred have put a delay in it. We think it's only a delay, it's not a cancellation, and we're hopeful by the end of the year we'll have a clear and agenda, a timetable for the review, which the industry needs if it's going to move forward.
And as well as that, what else do you need as a tech sector, people making products with radios in them? What do you need government and the regulators to do for you?
We also hope that they will back a mandation that all products should be digital capable. We think that will go through the European Parliament by the spring of next year. And then it'll be up to member states, and therefore it'll be up to the UK on do they want to follow that. We think, you know, if we're serious about digital radio, we should help people stop buying product that won't work in a digital-only future.
But presumably the manufacturers are making those FM-only radios because people are still getting them off the shelf and buying them.
Yeah, exactly. You can't blame manufacturers and retailers. If people are coming in wanting an FM radio and there's no plan to turn it off, which there isn't today, well, fair enough, they're going to buy them. But if we're serious about getting that message about the future is digital, I think we have a duty to us as customers to make sure we buy product that's future-proof to a degree.
Peter Lawson's here as well from the Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders. We hear a lot at these events about radios in cars, and we finally seem to be getting there.
96%, yeah, we've got there. I mean, the long tail is there, but yeah, more than 9 out of 10 cars coming onto the roads each year have them. 2.2 million cars a year, that's really going to help spread that through the park in a couple of years. 15, 16 million, that's half the vehicle park. But again, half the vehicle production now is connected, so IP. So there are more options for listening in car, and car manufacturers will provide people with a full range of options in that ecosystem, whether it's broadcast or IP.
Could we have been quicker to get DAB into a lot more cars to make sure that radio was more up front than the IP side of things and people using Spotify in their cars?
I guess you could say about any deployment, the acceleration could have been faster. I think it was pretty good. But perhaps more certainty around the timelines would have helped with that, and that would certainly help with conversion to of the vehicle park. That would happen a lot quicker if listeners and the tech sector and automotive knew when it was actually going to come about.
And good news today about the expansion of the coverage of the second digital national multiplex. That gives people a better experience in their cars, particularly when they're driving about and the signal disappears.
Yeah, I mean, dropouts are not good for anyone, so increased coverage in all respects is good. I mean, part of our infrastructure consultation input was looking at IP infrastructure and how network operators might work better together to provide a good experience that on that side of things too. Put the two together and I think hopefully it should be win-win in car.
If we get a date and that date is soon, is that better for you guys?
The sooner the better for automotive, yeah. It provides a greater conversion opportunity. That's a very inward-looking perspective. I think for other stakeholders, for broadcasters, they want more time, and I kind of understand that. But really, at the same time, I think there's a danger in it for radio too. Too much delay won't do them any good either. I think they need to see it sooner rather than later too. If we don't get an announcement by the end of the year, I think it will erode the remaining confidence that people have in the process since they've seen the delays before. So another one would hopefully not be one too many, but you know, there is a risk there.
I'm with Laurie Hallett from the SSDAB Multiplex in Norwich. We had almost an announcement about the expressions of interest today that they've had a couple of hundred. Are you kind of buoyed by the fact that SSDAB is going to expand in a massive way?
Well, I wouldn't hold my breath, to be honest, because I think there's a lot of things that have got to be gone through with DCMS and Ofcom and more consultation. But there's clearly a really high level of interest. I would say 200 expressions is probably pessimistic. The question is, how do they plan it? How do they do the assessments? Where do they assess? They can't just say, right, everyone apply, because it will take them too long to work through that. They'll have to do it regionally. What will they do with the existing 10 services first? They'll probably have to license them. If you think back to the days of community radio, the access pilots were licensed first, and then they started to roll out the system more formally. We've all got our licenses extended into 2020. I don't think any of us want them extended temporarily again.
And how's the process gone for you? Has it been as you expected?
Yes, although I would say it's been more successful than we expected. So we're in Norwich. Norwich is not a big city. We never expected to fill the multiplex. The multiplex is full. It's been full most of this year. And we turn away an interested station, put them on our list of potential stations once, twice, three times a month. There's a lot of interest out there. And that's surprising for a city of less than 250,000 people.
And it's important for areas like the one where you're operating to expand the choice, which is what digital radio should be about.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we're an unusual area in Norfolk because up until now, in a couple of weeks' time, it will change. We haven't had the Digital 2 network. That's about to roll out. That will actually fill up space on our multiplex, because we've always carried from the outset Jazz FM. Once Jazz FM moves on to SDL, then we'll have space there. So we can tick at least one off our list of reserve services.
And the good thing that we've seen from the SSDAB trials has been the accessibility to get on digital radio, because it's a lower price point entry for smaller stations and groups wanting to get on.
If you think about it, the old restricted service licenses for a month, 28 days, they cost in the region of the same amount that we charge for a service to be on all year round. So it's a dramatic change, but in terms that we operate on a not-for-profit basis, so any excess funds we generate go into the local community radio station. But the point is that if you're charging anywhere between £1,500 and £2,000 per service, and your service is costing you in the region of £10,000 a year to run, and you've got 20 services, you can see that it can be, even when we're running it on a low-cost basis, it can generate significant revenues to help develop content on local services.
We know people are still, in some places, not listening digitally, so some firm confirmation from government would help operators like you.
It would, and I think the key point about these low-power multiplexes, these smaller multiplexes, is that they fill in a hole. If you're a large-scale service, if you're a regional or national service, there's plenty of space for you. But if you're a small-scale commercial operator, if you're a small-scale community operator, or an online service wanting to get greater exposure in a particular area, this is the way to do it.
This event is also about the product manufacturers, and Rob Haycock is the CEO of Pure. These are fancy new things that you've announced.
Yeah, we've tried to basically reinvent radio for the smart era. And these devices basically enable you to consume radio however you'd like to consume it. And we don't mind whether you're streaming it, whether you're getting it through DAB, whether you want to use Alexa to control it, or frankly, you want to be old-fashioned and you want to, you know, use a preset. And it does all that. And it's designed to do that for a much younger generation that are going to buy radios with volume control knobs and, you know, preset buttons all over it.
And it's, a case of if you can't beat them, join them, because the Alexa devices are flying off the market.
Yeah, well, I come from an industry which is in the mobile sector, and if you saw what happened to them over 20 years, all those things like iPods and Walkmans, they're all history now. And all these things are going to device. And if we stand and let the wave go past over Alexa and Google, we will be nowhere.
So you've got an in-home device and you've got a kind of portable one.
Correct.
When are these going on sale?
So the in-home one is on sale.
The Discover,
The Discover is on sale in November. And the DAB radios, which are, in all intents and purposes, look identical and have all the same feature set, they're launched in January at CES.
And it's interesting that you have put that DAB chip in there.
Correct. Because in Europe, so our biggest market is not the UK, is in Europe. DAB, obviously, with all the switchovers, is still driven by DAB broadcast content. So we need to have a product to go alongside all our existing range of products, which really accesses that.
Presumably, there's no FM chip in that.
Correct.
That's a definite decision that you've taken, because a lot of your products still have FM chips in them.
Correct. So a standard legacy product will have an FM chipset, but the new products, we've just gone straight with digital.
And from what we've heard from government, we haven't had anything concrete, as has been the case over the last few years as well. What do you want ministers to be saying to you?
Well, we've already shown we're not going to sit and wait. We cannot sit and wait. We need the market to move on. They need a date, because otherwise all of us, we haven't heard from the retailers yet, but when you hear from the retailers what's happening to their space, so they currently have 6 metres of stores in John Lewis, you won't have 6 metres of radios in John Lewis for the next 4 years unless we do something serious about it. And that's the only way, is by encouraging the consumers to go and actually adopt a digital radio in its entirety.
Well, here's the thing on the Radio Today programme podcast. It's the BBC's new top podcast guy, Jason Phipps.
Well, I'm just one of the few people doing podcasts in the BBC, by the way. There's lots of commissioners, but I'm kind of fairly new on the block, yeah? So I'm the sounds podcast commissioner for podcasts, essentially.
So you said on stage it was like you jumped on a moving train.
Yeah, I think the BBC gets a slightly bad rap for being, you know, the least agile of organisations. Well, I can tell you, in the podcast space and in the audio space, all guns are blazing at the BBC. There's a real amazing movement. And the BBC Sounds app is a kind of real representation of that kind of real forward foot in the space, wanting to be a genuine kind of big discovery portal. And then podcasting plays a massive role in that. And that's why I come in, sort of commissioning very native, what I call native podcast, essentially.
And obviously to make the move back to the Beeb from The Guardian where you were, you obviously saw what the corporation's plans were in terms of what they wanted to do with podcasts and the investment.
Yeah, I mean, like, really honestly, if we were to catch up with the Americans, I'm, come on, let's catch up with the... Let's not give it all to the Americans. If we're to catch up with the Americans, it's very notable that America has a really distinct public service involvement via NPR, and that NPR itself had kind of fed the evolution and the innovation, and it's benefited everyone, you know, like public service and commercial. Everyone benefits. And I think the BBC can play that equal role, a kind of exact role in that space, which it can really just like grow the audience at a rate that maybe the indie stroke commercial sector can't do on its own. And that's what we're trying to do, essentially.
I don't know whether you were here for Jimmy Buckland from Wireless, and he was having a bit of a whinge about the lack of a level playing field between commercial groups like his. Obviously, they're a radio broadcaster with TalkSport and Talk Radio, competing with the BBC, but also now making independent podcasts through its own studios. Was there any foundation to his criticism that actually you should be doing more public service and less of the Peter Crouch and the Robbie Savage and that kind of popular podcast?
How many people listen to podcasts in the UK? Let's just say 5.7, you know, 6 million, yeah? It's a massive growth industry. So everyone's a winner in the game. And Wireless hired an ex-colleague of mine, Matt Hall. They've building brand new suite of studios. They've got the power of, you know, Talk Sport merged with all the News International titles. It's an amazing time for Wireless. So he's got too much to be doing, really. He's got too many wins to be winning that to be kind of griping at the BBC. But I understand what he's saying. The truth is, we do need to have a public service podcasting strategy, and I'm trying to do that. I'm trying to make a distinct proposition in that area and really add value. But I mean, like the BBC has always added value, you know, in essentially it's added value for very kind of niche audiences. It's added into the kind of ecosystem what wouldn't exist in the commercial sector, but it's also there to kind of entertain and inform. We're there to make, and in fact, if I think there's an opportunity for all of us, it's for first-time podcasters, it's the kind of Love Island, it's the Peter Crouch podcast. It's, there's so much space for big, beautiful, brash, funny, entertaining podcasts, and we should all be in the game. Everyone's there. It could be a winner in that game, I think.
I know everyone at the BBC is sending ideas your way. What's the best thing that's come across your desk so far?
There's been a couple of interesting propositions. There's been a couple of propositions where they don't really need the BBC. The truth, you know, here's the truth. Podcasting is a really highly functioning market, even at a lower level than the US here in the UK. There's so many interesting commissioners in the space. You know, Audio Boom was up on the platform with me commissioning great content. They've got a brilliant sort of true crime podcast coming out, Dead Man Talking. Audible are a powerhouse in the UK now. Kenta Pinto at Audible's just going to change that. Great, great kind of commissioning. Spotify are finding their feet in the space. I mean, it's a happy time for creatives in the space. So, you know, I would say the stuff that's coming past my desk, I think, it's just kind of uniquely public service at the moment. I think people are trying to find the exact kind of target, you know, literally, you know, the center of the bullseye, like a really distinct public service proposition, and also something I think that is unique to the BBC. So there's been a few, I'm avoiding the question basically. Like, what I'm trying to say is it's a healthy market, so we keep our cards close to our chest, basically.
Gethin's here. You've been hosting the conference today. You said you felt you had to do it because you knew in the job and back in radio. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, my boss asked me to do it. No, I was joking aside. Actually, on a serious note, I thought I knew quite a lot about the industry until I got here today. And actually, I've been doing my diligence over the last couple of weeks, and it's just massive. The minefield of digital radio and how we're consuming it, how we're listening to it, massive interest to me, obviously, starting a new show with Hits Radio, doing the breakfast show. I'm kind of a geek like that anyway, so I was genuinely really fascinated by it, and some talented people in the industry, so what wasn't to like?
And you've done some radio before with the BBC and with Global at heart. Are you finding it different at Bauer?
Yeah, absolutely. I think all the stuff I've done has been very diverse, from a talk station like Radio 5 Live to Heart when I did the Sunday show with Caroline Flack, which is a bit more relaxed. And now the breakfast show is like the Saturday night TV show, isn't it? And for 4 hours every morning, we have to be on our game. We have to be quick. We have to be funny. We have to get in and out of tracks. And I'm loving that challenge. It's a different skill, different way of doing things, whilst focusing entirely on personality, which sounds like you just put the mic on and talk, but you don't. There's so much more to it. So I have a lot of respect for a lot of my peers, a lot of people I listen to anyway, and we're always learning, aren't we, as we...
I'm back in Manchester as well.
I know, I've got to go now. I've been up since R4, so I came down the train. I'm heading back there now. I've got a Spanish lesson tomorrow because we've got a little Spanish challenge coming up at the end of the year, myself and Gemma. So it's all good, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
Well, look who I found clutching an award from the Digital Radio Hall of Fame. It's Ralph Bernard.
Good afternoon, or good evening now, isn't it? Yeah,
nice podcast. It's any time of day.
Yeah, actually, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
How important is it to recognise people like yourself who are the pioneers of digital radio?
Well, it's nice to be recognised. I mean, I wouldn't say it's necessarily as important to do that, but the fact that it's recognition for something that we all went through as a major... It was a major exercise in making sure that you could keep your feet on the ground at the time when there were so many people saying, you know what, this is in commercial radio, isn't it? This is not going to work. It's too expensive. It's a BBC-run thing. And actually, to see it now as such a successful medium and to see it spreading into the world of other devices, you know, away from not necessarily just radio, or you know, radio receivers, it's fantastic. So for me, at the other end of my career, the wrong end of my career, and seeing this be so successful and seeing such an event as this is really fantastic.
Yeah. Did you foresee in the late 90s that we would get to a point where we're nearly at talking about a date for switchover?
Well, I would be lying to you if I said that I didn't foresee it, because I did, because I predicted it. My prediction was 2015, so I'm still significantly out, although in the context of the evolution of time, it's a pinprick.
And do you miss the day-to-day involvement in radio that you used to have?
I miss the programming side. I miss the radio, the genuine radio side, the involvement in just developing, helping to develop programs, and I do not miss the running of a commercial radio group as a quoted stock market entity. That was tough and difficult, but necessary.
Having been there at the top of the commercial radio game, what do you think of Rupert Murdoch's investment and what he's now doing with Wireless Group?
He's 30 years too late. He's 30 years too late. He should have been in years ago. He would have been. It would have been a completely different industry, I think, by then, because he would have actually been... He's the sort of guy, I think, who would have put a lot more money at the time when it needed serious investment. And so we might actually have had digital radio being, as in a switchover sense, maybe 10 years ago. Maybe not 10, but certainly 5 years ago. But the fact that he's coming in now in the way that he is good news. I think what he's bought, that company is a brilliant company. I really think that they have been very innovative. I love what they've done with the cricket. I love what they're doing with putting their money and into Virgin and getting Chris Evans across. I mean, so I think that's a very exciting development in radio.
You sound like you would like to still be there.
Well,
after telling me you didn't.
Well, no, I mean, I'm still. I make radio programs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I do. I make a few documentaries here and there, and I enjoy that. So I enjoy the programming side. It's a business side I'm not really fussed about.
Well, congratulations again on the award, Ralph.
Thanks so
much. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks a lot.
So another Drive to Digital conference comes to an end. We were here pretty much a year ago, and talking about progress, are we any further? Ford Ennals is the CEO of Digital Radio UK. Not quite an announcement of switchover from the government, but we might be getting there next year.
Yeah, I thought what we heard today was strong alignment between all the broadcasters. We heard the BBC, Bauer and Global all spoke, I thought, quite passionately about there needing to be a digital future for radio and that they wanted to head in that direction. There's probably a difference of opinions about the pace we need to go at, but everyone wants to end in the same place. And we also heard from both the minister and the senior official at DCMS saying, you know, that they are planning to review and they want to get on with it. And they talked a bit about big decisions next year. So I think
think we're about to go into that process. Didn't quite get there today, but it's ahead of us. We've obviously hit the thresholds they set for us, the 50% listening, the coverage build out. But I thought, I don't know how you felt, but I thought it was a good day. A lot of great energy today. A lot of talk about the new initiatives, the new stations, the new signings. Obviously, Chris Evans and Eddie Mayer catch the eye. But also a wonderful session on podcasting, which I think shows how radio and audio is changing.
And in terms of if we get to a point where we've got a date, that will help people really plan for how they move forward.
Well, you know, I think we need a plan is the first thing we need. And I think a time frame would be helpful. But then that's something that DCMS and the broadcasters and everyone's going to look at in the next year. I think what also was identified today by two people, one by Arkiva, who pointed out that coverage could still be improved, particularly on the road networks. So I think that's something that hopefully this process will look at and take steps at. The other thing we heard about was that still a lot of sales are analogs. Sales. So the radio is being sold at retail, many, many analog radios being sold, which is taking us backwards. So we heard from retailers who are saying we ought to move towards a mandate for all retailers to sell digital radios and not sell analog anymore. And hopefully that's something we could see next year.
2 million FM radios still being sold. There's obviously a demand for them. So it's changing the mindset of those people. It's not only changing the technology and the delivery and the content, but it's getting those people to physically get a new one.
Yeah, I mean, it's extraordinary, as you said, that there's a couple of million analog radios still going out. I mean, it's not happening in the car because 95% of those are digital. But we think, given that where we're heading and we're heading for digital, that it does make sense for people to buy analog-only receivers. All digital receivers have analog in them. I think there is an issue about price point. I think a lot of those sales are very, very cheap. You know, maybe £10 clock radios, so that needs to be looked at. But I do think in the next couple of years, we will definitely see this movement to all digital sales at retail.
And we've just been celebrating some of the pioneers of digital radio with your Digital Radio Hall of Fame new inductees. How important is that, celebrating where we've been up until today?
Well, I think it's a sign of how mature, grown up, and indeed successful digital radio is. It's been going for 20 years. Frankly, it had a difficult first 10 years. I think the last 8 years, as we've celebrated today, have been one of acceleration and one of collaboration. So that was why I think it's very fitting. From the 9 awards that were given today, you know, we were recognising retailers, we were recognising broadcasters, DCMS officials, Ofcom engineers. So it shows just how a collaborative event it was. And I thought one of the nice moments right at the very end of today was when Helen Bowden gave a special recognition award to Ed Vasey, who's been a real pillar of strength for the last, you know, the 6-7 years that he was Culture Secretary, and he was back today to celebrate digital radio.
Another year nearly flying by. Is 2019 going to be the year we get that fixed day and month and year that we're having to switch over?
You know, I don't think we can, you know, you and I we've been having this conversation probably for 8 years, and I don't think we can say hard and fast. I think what we will do is see more progress, more investment, and more initiatives. And, you know, we're at 50% digital now. You know, we're going to get to 60-70% probably quite quickly. So it's about planning that digital future, and I think we'll be clearer next year. Whether we'll have a firm date, I doubt it.
I'm with Ed Vasey, former Minister for Digital, and a surprise for you. You were saying how you wanted one of these awards and they gave you one.
Yeah, I was grouching that I wasn't on the award. Obviously, a lot of the people getting the awards, people I worked closely with on digital radio for 6 years, all of whom, incidentally, did thoroughly deserve their awards. But so I thought, well, maybe, you know, why couldn't I get one? And then they gave me one. It was a genuine surprise, actually. Genuine surprise.
You still do have some parliamentary involvement with radio and the committees that you're on and the groups that you're involved with. Do you miss being in charge of it and setting policy?
I don't really, actually. I'm now chairman of the all-party group on commercial radio. So basically what I've done since I was sacked as a minister is reinvent my ministerial portfolio, but sort of outside of DCMS. So you get some of the flexibility. I think you do miss making some of the decisions, but it's really nice to come back and meet old friends, and it's nice to still have a foot in the radio camp because radio obviously remains so important.
And obviously you pushed things on for digital radio a lot in your time at the DCMS. How do you think your successors are doing with it, and what would be your advice for the new Culture Secretary?
Well, I think you've got to keep plugging away. I've got to say that although I am really chuffed and surprised to have got an award, the one person who didn't get an award and I guess couldn't give himself an award is Ford Ennals. And I think Digital Radio UK does an immensely brilliant job. And all the time I was radio minister, Ford and his team were immensely practical in how can we make progress in terms of building the infrastructure, getting it into cars, getting it into retail. And I think the minister's job was always to talk up the benefits of digital, to show it wasn't going away, to show it was here to stay. And I think ministers need to do that more, frankly. But maybe I'm missing it because I'm not in the DCMS. Maybe it goes out to specialist audiences. But you do need to keep talking up the benefits of digital, because we are getting to the point now where we've reached the tipping point where the majority of listening is digital. You know, I'm just hoping that ministers have their eye on the ball in terms of what obstacles can they move out of the way to make digital penetration even deeper.
And you're still listening to radio and championing it?
Well, I've just got a new car. So I had this old knackered Volkswagen, which we managed to rack up 205,000 miles on, which we converted to digital. But we've just bought a new Skoda.
Oh, I've got a Skoda as well.
And it's got digital radio, as you will, I don't need to tell you, digital radio built in. And I'm very excited. And funny enough, I did say, I said to my wife, you know, if we're going to buy a new car, it's got to have digital.
That was Ed Vasey finishing off our roundup of speakers and delegates at Drive to Digital 2018, held at the British Museum in Central London this week. Coming up, David Lloyd's Radio Moments. Next, James Cridland.
Visual radio smarter and cheaper. Virtual director from Broadcast Bionics combines your social media, messaging, photos, audio and videos with intelligent camera control and automated graphics. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
At james.crid.land, I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist. This week, a recap of the Next Radio Ideas Conference. Last week in London was the Next Radio Conference, a great fun day with lots of very good speakers. Now, if you read my stuff, all two of you, you might remember that a while ago I wrote about Triple J's Hottest 100, saying at the time that it was one of the world's largest radio events. Ollie Ward's spoke at Next Radio, and I liked one of his summing up points at the end about outside broadcasts.
OBs don't necessarily equal event radio. You'll split your audience, you'll change your focus and end up talking to the hundreds or thousands of people that are at your event rather than the millions of people listening at home.
It's a worthwhile 18-minute watch. Also from Australia, and also a great 18-minute watch, Wade Kingsley talked about brainstorming. Brainstorming is bullshit, he said, and highlighted how much we've taken for granted in those horrible brainstorming meetings we're forced to have, which science have proved don't work.
People are more creative when they're in a group, right? So you can have idea sessions or creativity on your own, but you get people in a group and we're going to be more creative.
Bullshit.
No, not true. What does the science tell us? In studies dating back to 1987, it's being overwhelmingly proven that people create more innovative ideas when they're on their own.
Good ideas are hard to find, and he gave a good few ideas on how you might get better ones. Valerie Geller is well known to many within radio for good reason. Her mantra of tell the truth, make it matter, never be boring is the fundamental building block of great radio.
The work that I do is just based on three things, and it never changes. People go, oh, what are you going to talk about this time? Because, you know, I've been around for a while. What are you going to talk about this time? And I'm like, it's the same message, because it's what works. Tell the truth, make it matter, and never be boring.
Unbeknownst to her, I added another 5 minutes to her available time, knowing she'd do a great job of it. There are no boring stories, only boring storytellers, as she says. An interesting recurring theme of the conference was listener participation. Top 40 station BBC Radio 1 has undergone a big change, a brand new breakfast show. Alid Haydon-Jones was good enough to share with us a few of the things they'd done. A game of hide and seek with true BBC health and safety treacle slowing the whole thing down. And a game of pass the pasty, which he said really worked.
Well, despite being the same week that a Mr. Evans over at Radio 2 announced he may be leaving, we still saw record numbers on the breakfast show that we haven't seen in a very long time. And that was that week. So we were very happy with that.
Listening to Greg James on the new breakfast show was a wake-up call for me. Instead of a morning crew full of self-absorbed chat about showbiz, this new show makes the listeners the star. And quite rightly, it's a wonderful breath of fresh air. It was also fun to hear from Michel Collin, who spoke about selling radio advertisements in sub-Saharan Africa.
I did work with these two guys, Simon and Néron, and we went explaining to a small trader, a small store, how to advertise on radio to making a promotion about the price. And so they started to advertise on this radio. And after that, all the small traders of the town went on radio. It was a huge success. And they, it's like a small economy, ecosystem of marketing. Once a trader starts, all the other ones want to do the same thing.
Interesting to hear that what works there is the same as what works everywhere. Playing clients other radio ads, giving them great audio, and working with them to understand their business. There were many, many more highlights of the day, and you'll find the whole conference for free at the Next Radio website, where you can also join our newsletter for next year. The address is next.radio. You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening. Oh, and here's another speaker of the day, David Lloyd. Radio.
Brand licensing has been around for a few years in radio now. You do a deal and you can use another station's name and gain all the benefits that brings, whether it's Virgin or Heart or whatever. One branding deal in the 90s was with a company called Phase FM. They arranged with EMAP to use the KISS name on their Manchester and Yorkshire stations. But one complication of brand agreements, depending on the small print, can be that when you terminate it, the transition can be a little abrupt. Here's how KISS in Yorkshire ended and Galaxy began this week 21 years ago.
KISS 105. You found it, baby.
Yeah, official figures prove what you already know. KISS 105 is Yorkshire's biggest new radio station, and 384,000 people have made the switch to KISS.
KISS! KISS!
Kiss.
And already nearly one in three 15 to 24-year-olds across Yorkshire and the East Coast are locked to KISS 105.
The music just turns me on.
And then 5 minutes later, after a two-second gap...
Locked in to the brand new Galaxy 102 and 105. Welcome.
Farewell KISS and hello Galaxy Yorkshire this week in 1997. Now as capital and with much more competition, its reach amongst 15 to 24s has risen from just under a third to 39%. Another farewell this week 34 years ago.
I'll fly for you. That is the sound there of Spandau Ballet. And that's it. Well, 17 years. I opened up the station on September the 30th, 1967, 17 years ago. I've had a wonderful time here. I'd like to thank, before anything else, I'd like to thank Ted Beston, who's produced the show and whose career I've destroyed over the last 2.5 years. And thank you very much indeed to Ted Gerrard and Brian Thompson as well, who are the people who have put all the tapes and little bits and pieces together. I'd like to also thank the National Press, actually, for being very kind to me yesterday and writing some very nice things over the last, 4 or 5 weeks or so, and over the last 17 years, for that matter.
Tony Blackburn and saying farewell to Radio 1 this week in 84. Let's stay with farewells. Dewi Griffiths was a familiar voice in Wales, and this week, 4 years ago, he hosted his last programme after 60 years at the BBC.
Will I be coming back for the odd occasion? I don't think so. 60 years and 4 months. That'll be on my plaque in my house when I put up the wreath of roses, saying I'm not dead, just retired.
Dewi Griffiths hosting his last String of Pearls on BBC Radio Wales. He was 83 at the time. Now, can we get nostalgic about a DAB multiplex? Well, we'll try. It is a fifth anniversary after all. The West Midlands Digital Multiplex MXR closed 5 years ago.
Hello, people of the West Midlands. Kerrang Radio has now moved. We're still around, just not right here. All you have to do is retune your digital radio and you should find us again. It's really easy. If you can't figure it out, hit kerrangradio.co.uk/transmission and you'll find some helpful tips. Or just ask a young person. So go on, retune your...
Services move around as the DAB regional multiplex strategy gives way to local this week in 2013, and MXR in the West Midlands closes. Now, we found another final to mark. It's the final edition of Children's Favourites. This show was part of life for a generation, on air from 1954 and only disappearing as the Light programme itself prepared to close this week in 1967. One of its most famous presenters was Derek McCulloch. Uncle Mac.
Hello, children.
Hello.
Most of you loved singing hymns.
Oh, yes.
For that reason, we are making these records specially for you so that you may play them over and sing them at home. We are not able to sing all the verses in each hymn we have chosen, but as they are all in hymns ancient and modern, you can find them yourselves. Our first is a hymn called All Things Bright and Beautiful.
Derek McCulloch. Children's Favourites aired on Saturday mornings for much of its life, 9 o'clock it was. As Ed Stewart found out in a revival edition, any child who got a mention would never forget it.
So let's go to our first letter, which comes from, not so little these days, but little when she wrote in those days, Leslie Clark, who is now Leslie Rigby from Rainhill, Merseyside. And she writes, I was 8 years old when my request was played by Uncle Mac in about 1957, 1958. I had been to the King and I, and was so taken with the song Getting to Know You, sung by Deborah Carr, that I wrote in and requested it. And the thrill when I heard my name read out was unbelievable. Let's try again, Leslie. Leslie Clark, for you from The King and I.
It's a very ancient
Ed Stewart, a long-standing host of Junior Choice, which replaced Children's Favourites as Radio 1 began. The tunes played for children were pretty standard selections, often novelty songs. Goodness, what was that?
It is I, your piano.
No, not my piano speaking.
Yes.
You can talk. Good, we'll give you a BBC local radio evening show.
Don't be surprised.
No, I won't. Do you want it?
Yes.
Sparky's Magic Piano, a children's favourite. And the programme ended this week in 1967. As Nick Grimshaw settles into his new Radio 1 slot, let's remember now it's 6 years since he began at breakfast time.
And I'm going to be here on air with you until 10 a.m, Monday to Friday, for I don't know how long, really, just until the country uprises and I get thrown back to the night time. But for now, it's time to follow in the footsteps of some of my favourite people, like Coxie and Moyles, and do the very difficult job of talking in between records. Quite a surreal day for me. Been dreaming of this since that little child, and now it is day one of the big job, and I'm excited.
The Grimmers' debut on Radio 1 Breakfast this week in 2012. So, with the death of Grace Archer in The Archers 63 years ago,
Grace!
Alan Freeman taking over Pick of the Pops from David Jacobs 57 years ago,
and from 11:20, all the current Top 20 hit paraders.
Regional radio arriving in the East Midlands 21 years ago.
Be listening at 6 a.m. for the start of Radio 106 FM.
Peter Powell leaving Radio 1 30 years ago.
Summer radio on the Peter Powell Show.
And Chrysalis buying LBC and selling Bristol's Galaxy 101 16 years ago. Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thank you, David and James, and Radio Today's Roy Martin. And thanks to Ford and Yvette for welcoming us to Drive to Digital. We'll be back with another podcast next week.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.